I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barber shop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for their shape-up this week, author Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, NPR political editor Ken Rudin, and syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete is actually here in Washington with us. So take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas, welcome to the shop. What's going on?
Hey.
Reprimand me.
Hey. Great, man. Greetings from Washington, D.C., baby. It's a little colder here than San Diego, I got to say.
Yeah, it's a tough
life out there. Well, check this out. We're going to kick things off talking about the whistleblower site WikiLeaks, which released a quarter of a million secret State Department documents and has sent the Obama administration into a tailspin, Michelle.
You know, this has been all over the news, as I think many people know, that top officials like Secretary of State Hillary Clinton have said that this is endangering national security. Here's U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder talking about this. He says he's launching a criminal investigation.
Along with other members of the administration, I condemn the action that WikiLeaks has taken. It puts at risk our national security, but in a more concrete way. It puts at risk individuals who are serving this country in a variety of capacities, either as diplomats, as intelligence assets. It puts at risk the relationships that we have with important allies around the world. We have an active, ongoing criminal investigation with regard to this matter.
I'd like to play for you, though, a clip of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange defending the site and the leak of the cables and these other documents that were previously secret. And I just want to mention that the sound is a little muffled. It's from a digital video conference with Arab investigative journalists. Here it is.
This organization has a four-year publishing history. As far as we are aware, as far as anyone has ever alleged in any credible manner whatsoever, no single individual has ever come to harm as a result of anything that we have ever published.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks for that, Michelle. Now, Ken, I'm all for freedom of the press, right? The public's right to know, but this WikiLeaks, it has potential to cross some lines. Now, is the WikiLeaks dump is an example of investigative journalism, or is it an act of espionage? Get us started.
Well, there's nothing investigative about it. Basically, the documents were stolen, and they were sent to WikiLeaks, and they published it. So there's really not much investigation going on. It's fascinating what it's done to our relationship with our allies. I mean, the fact is we now know the president of Yemen is supporting U.S. Air attacks on suspected al-Qaeda attacks outposts when the president of Yemen is telling his own people that he's against it. So, I mean, there are a lot of lies going out that have been uncovered, and it's made it put a lot of people in uncomfortable positions. But having said that, you know, all the smiles that we publicly that we say about Pakistan, we now know our true feelings about our relationship with Pakistan, our relationship with Russia, and, you know, whether Putin and, you know, what's going on there. So a lot of interesting things have come out, but ultimately these are stolen documents that were published now. It's interesting, a lot of people who are denouncing this are the same kind of people who applauded the leaks of the Pentagon Papers back in 1971.
Which were also stolen.
But
here's the difference, and this is why I think this is such a difficult question, because the Pentagon Papers were, in fact, stolen, but it was an act of civil disobedience. He knew he was stealing them. He was stealing them because he felt that this was in the service of exposing wrongdoing, criminal behavior, in his view, or at least wrong behavior by the government. It was not simply a question of peeking behind the curtain. So that's the difference. I mean, traditionally, the leaks that we have been most interested in have been leaks in the service of saying the government is engaging in lying itself. And so, therefore, this action is needed in order to expose deception, deceit, wrongdoing, misconduct, etc.
I think there's a lot of lies that went on during Vietnam. There are a lot of lies that's going on in foreign policy today. So in many ways, it's more similar than we think.
Interesting. What do other people think? I'm interested in this. What do other people think?
A-Train.
Well, go ahead. Okay. Go ahead.
I mean, you know, the WikiLeaks story here is it's taking on, you know, an entirely, you know, new paradigm within international law. You know, obviously now we have Interpol coming out with a quote-unquote red notice alert, which is technically not an arrest warrant. It basically says that if Julian Assange is found in any country where the country is a member of Interpol, which is pretty much every country in the world, they will contact Sweden on these sexual molestation and rape charges, and then Sweden and that country will negotiate as to whether there'll be any sort of extradition. You know, what's interesting to note is that, you know, WikiLeaks gave these documents to media organizations like The Guardian in the UK, Der Spiegel in Germany, El Pais in Spain, Le Monde in France, and then by default, The New York Times, where the executive editor, Bill Keller, said that they edited out information after the first dump that could identify confidential sources, all these sorts of things. So then the question legally becomes...
Can I just clarify the point of clarification? The New York Times did not get them from Julian Assange. They got them from The Guardian,
right,
who had a cooperative relationship with them. Julian Assange deliberately did not give them to the New York Times this time, and it's not clear why. Apparently, he was annoyed with them because he felt that they were questioning...
He had given it to them previously.
He had given them previous documents, but he was annoyed with them because he felt that they were, criticizing him or questioning him, or he didn't think they were tough enough on the issues he cared. So just clarify that.
Sure, and the interesting thing is that, for those people who, are proponents of prosecuting Julian Assange, the argument then becomes, do you also prosecute, The Guardian, Der Spiegel, El Pais, Le Monde, and all these other media organizations for publishing this information also? And let's not forget that, a lot of this stuff was already known and in the public domain. Like, Nicolas Sarkozy is an arrogant man. Kelsey Priest, Silvio Berlusconi.
But he's French.
Berlusconi in Italy, is a big crazy, Mamma Mia. This is...
he likes women, too.
Right, exactly.
And no.
So,
I think the analogy with the Pentagon Papers is apt in the sense that this is sort of become our millennial version of that, obviously with the internet, with the advent of 24/7 information and things like that. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see. And let's not forget, Julian Assange is not an American. So, people saying that he should be charged with treason, well, with him not being an American, he owes no duty to this country under the law.
That's an interesting point. Ruben, what did you want to say?
Well, a couple things. First of all, there's three things I find interesting about this. One is that sort of being pulled out from both directions. If you are a civil libertarian who believes in free speech and freedom of the press, you're inclined to applaud this sort of action, particularly if it came against the Bush administration, because then it's a twofer. I love the Constitution and I hate Bush. So in this regard, it's a twofer. It's very easy. We get back to the story about the wiretapping, the domestic wiretapping story, and civil libertarians saying there's no issue here. The public's right to know is important. It's paramount. This is different. Because if you happen to be pro Barack Obama and the administration, you don't like the fact the administration has been put in a very difficult position. They're now calling for Hillary Clinton to resign in some cases for some of the things that has come out about the amount of information she's gathering on foreign diplomats and what she's doing with that information. And so it's put you in a bad spot in that regard. I love the Constitution and I love Barack Obama and I got you.
No, I just don't agree with that analogy is correct. In the civil wiretapping case, this is again, leaks were in the service of saying that the government is acting illegally and therefore I must expose this using methods which have their own moral challenges. But this is not that. They're not saying that they're exposing wrongdoing. They're saying they just want to tell you how it actually is.
It gets me to the other part of it. As two journalists, it gets us back to the other end of it, which is there's two parties here. I have more problem with the person who stole the documents. That person is in jail and should be in jail in custody. But I got leaked documents all the time. We would be out of business as journalists if we didn't use leaked documents. I would get leaked documents and at the bottom it would say, you can't use this. And I would be like, guess what? So that's not my role. I'm not a cop. I'm a journalist. Lastly, I think it is a bit hyperbolic to say this is a threat to national security. I think it's an embarrassment.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop with Ruben Navarrete, Jimmy Israel, Arsalan Iftikhar, and NPR editor Ken Rudin. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Well, we knew New York Congressman Charles Rangel would have to pay the piper, and yesterday the legendary congressman faced his colleagues and received a rare form of public punishment known as censure, Michelle.
Yeah, the vote was pretty overwhelming. It was 333-79 in favor of censure. More Democrats than Republicans voted against it, obviously, but a significant number of Democrats did also vote for it as well. I'll just play a short clip of Congressman Rangel after the vote. Here it is.
I fully recognize that constitutionally that this body has the full jurisdiction to determine the conduct of one of its members. And even though it is painful to accept this vote, I am fully aware that this vote reflects perhaps the thinking not just of the members, but the political tide and the constituency of this body. But at the end of the day, as I started off saying, compared to where I've been, I haven't had a bad day since. Thank you.
Now, Jimmy, do you mind if I ask you, because you're kind of tough on the old guard. I hope you don't mind my saying that. And I'm just wondering how you react to that.
Listen, his response contained some of the dignity he should have kind of given at the front end, if you ask me. Listen, this is American politics. Everybody gets a third act. He'll be fine. let's not cry for him. Let's maybe send him a pastry and keep it in motion.
Jimmy, it does seem, this is Ruben again, it does seem
Ruben.
Like it really does seem he hasn't learned his lesson. This notion somehow of talking about the political wins, the fact that the party on the other side of the fence, the Republicans, are now coming into greater prominence, that's obviously not a non-issue here. There were some Democrats who voted for some sort of – this is really a mild thing. Censure is a mild thing. Further down the line was reprimand. It gets more severe.
Expulsion.
Censure
was the worst.
Before expulsion.
I seem to recall reading and hearing from him. I mean, one of the reasons I found he was so contrite and sort of, you know, was that this could have been much worse for him. And I think that there's a tendency to sort of say, you know, this is not my fault. This is politics. And I think a lot of it is his fault.
Oh, I agree completely. And I kind of think that had he been contrite months ago, it would have been a reprimand and it would have been a slap on the wrist. But he fought it to the end. The only time he showed contrition was right before the censure vote and in the ethics committee. And that's why it was an overwhelming vote to censure. And notice in the press conference right afterwards, it was back to the same old Charlie. Well, you know, it's politics and I didn't do anything wrong. You had to see Nancy Pelosi's face when she was reading off the charges yesterday. She was so somber, solemn, and upset. Charlie was almost like, you know, la-di-da about it.
I don't know.
Well, he is an American hero, not for nothing. And I guess he looks at it like, you know, he's done more good than bad. And in the broad spectrum of things, you know, he should have been kind of given a pass, which I don't agree with.
I don't know that he's saying he should be given a pass. I'm not sure. That's the piece I'm not quite sure on. But I'll tell you one argument that the Democrats made on the floor, and that is that there are people who have done worse things who got lesser sanction than him, who engaged. The only people who've really gotten censured have been people who didn't pay taxes, taking a bribe, and that's who
or sexual misconduct
or sexual misconduct or some serious legal charges. So their argument is this is excessive for what he did, and it wasn't intentional. That's the argument. Clearly, the House didn't buy it.
But 105 Democrats voted against reprimand. There was an option to vote for reprimand. 105 Democrats voted against it. So not that many Democrats. Really, the Democratic Party was really
screwed. So they didn't
buy it.
So anyway, the sense of the room, as I understand it, North Carolina is like, when are we going to talk about LeBron? When are we going to talk about LeBron? Let's talk about what really matters here. He's like, I'm waiting to talk about it. Okay, so for those who don't know, and I think that probably includes Jimmy because he doesn't care, even though he's in Cleveland, he made his return to Cleveland last night. Some people say this was the most anticipated game of the young NBA season. I'll just play, here's what it sounded like during the player introduction. Now, of course, just people remember that Cleveland was really mad when LeBron not only left for the Miami Heat, but he also I can't use the words that would be appropriate. Made a big extravaganza about it. Had this hour-long special on ESPN to talk about it, and this is how he was received by his former home team. Here it is.
At 4'6" from St. Vincent St. Mary High School, number 6, LeBron James.
Well, there were a lot of other gestures and signs, which again, in the interest of taste, I won't share. Anyway, go ahead, Arsalan, how did it come out for him?
Well, you know, the Miami Heat, you know, beat the Cavaliers 118-90. You know, the Cavaliers are a lackluster team this year. And Miami Heat, you know, Dwayne Wade, LeBron, and Chris Bosh are only, you know, 1-7 against teams that are above 500. So they're playing way, way below any expectations. They've already lost twice to my beloved Celtics this year. This is something, you know, I think this was more of a media manufactured thing. I think, you know, compared to the actual reception at the game last night, and, you know, he was joking around with Booby Gibson of the Cavs and things like that. I mean, I think that this was something that, was just manufactured. I mean, they're going to
I disagree completely.
What
clearly.
Planet
clearly.
Are you
yeah.
on?
Clearly.
I'll go disagree
clearly
on that.
Was something that was media. Something if, media
wait,
was
wait, let me hear from Jimmy, just because, Jimmy, you're
in
Cleveland.
Oh, it's 2-2. We're split on this, right,
Jimmy,
down the middle.
You think it was, like, made up?
Yeah, clearly.
Oh, please.
Clearly it was.
Oh, no.
Somebody
me and Jimmy agree.
Revoke his guy card. Revoke his guy card.
It's betrayal. The thing about sports, and it's similar to politics.
To who?
To whom? No, but it is. I don't mean to be anti-semantic. No, really. But the point is, politics, thank you very much.
Right.
Sports is emotional. It's heart wrenching. It's gut wrenching. You live and die with your sports heroes.
Yeah.
And this city was betrayed by everything that LeBron James.
Okay, I'm gonna disagree with both Ken that it's much of a betrayal. I'm much more sympathetic to LeBron and all this. I become more sympathetic to him
agent.
All the
what
time.
What kind of free is not
exactly.
clear in that? Excuse me.
I also disagree. This was
the way
thing.
He
this
left.
Is a human drama. This is a big deal.
Yes,
his coming home was a big deal. It's a human drama, and I have never felt more sympathetic to this guy. I thought that the fans behaved childishly as if they owned this guy, And get a life, you know, Cavalier fans. This guy made a decision. He left the team. Win some, lose some. But I think they took it way too personally.
You know what?
Look at the way he left.
But let me get this. Can I just say this? Okay, I'm sorry. I know I'm the girl here. Okay, I'm sorry. But he's 25 years old. There are a lot of 25-year-olds who are sitting on their mama's couch eating chips who aren't, you know what I mean? I mean, he's 25 years old. I mean, does the fate of the whole city rest on his shoulders? Excuse me.
Apparently.
It's like lame. You know, go ahead, Arsalan.
As the true NBA junkie here, you know, there was something when he was on the Cavaliers, like even if you weren't a fan of the Cavs, anytime he walked into a stadium, people cheered for LeBron James, and now he's just become the persona non grata where he's getting booed in Memphis when they're playing the Grizzlies. Like
he was a class act last night, okay? And the fans who booed him and the fans who acted like this was, you know, their property gone astray did not act classy. He was a class act, and I think he said, you know, thank you for the time I spent here, and he came off better. He was the winner last night in more ways than one.
I still can't understand why Jimmy and Arsalan think this was made up.
I watch basketball on a nightly basis. You know, again, the Miami Heat, you know, if they were 14-2 right now, that'd be a completely different conversation. They have been underperforming so much to the point where people are like, you know, they might get
I gotta
seven.
Say, this
seven
is not
to
about basketball. This is, I'm sorry to say, this is
last
a
time
much
I checked,
bigger
betrayal.
No, it's about
the
human
last
drama.
Time
it's
an
a human
LBJ
drama
betrayed
about
us was 1968. LeBron James, Lyndon B. Johnson. Coincidence? I don't think so.
No, Jimmy, you get the final word because you're in Cleveland, even though you don't care, and we don't understand why you don't care. I'm gonna send you a cookie. I don't know what it is I can do to make you care, but. Go ahead. You get the final word.
I care. I'm glad to see LeBron did a great job, and he was here to do his job. And cool, my man. Go in peace.
Okay. The sun came up again today. Jimmy Israel is the author of The Denzel Principle. He joined us for member station WCPN in Cleveland. Also joining us here in our Washington, D.C. studios, Arsalan Iftikhar, the founder of TheMuslimGuy.com and a legal fellow for the Institute of Social Policy and Understanding. NPR's political editor Ken Rudin, and last but not least, Ruben Navarrete, columnist for the Washington Post Writers Group and CNN.com, all here in our Washington, D.C. studio. Thanks, everybody.
Peace.
Enjoy Cleveland, Jimmy.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.